Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, it's the Macko and Cause podcast in person. It's been a while because Bob got the C. And of course, I'm talking about the clap. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Matt. Man, I missed this. I got COVID for the second time this year. The first time was a bump in the road. Uh-huh. This one was a full-on divot. Oh, my gosh. It really kicked my ass.
Really?
Yeah. I'm still recovering.
So what is that like? Because everyone jokes, I'm the one who should have got it. I'm the one who's never got it. Maybe I did get it. I just didn't test. But Amy tests all the time for her job as a flight attendant and such. But how does it manifest itself?
Well, this time I started to feel really cold and achy and headachy. And I thought, uh-oh. And that was like on a Monday night.
Right.
And so I went to bed and woke up Tuesday morning and tested, had COVID. And it was like a really bad flu that didn't go away for about a week. Mm-hmm. Like I had a temperature for about 7 or 8 days. And then like after that though, what was really notable was my energy levels were incredibly low.
Yeah. That's
like
what I've
heard. The point where you get winded walking to the bathroom or up a flight of stairs where you actually have to stop and catch your breath. So that's really why I haven't been coming over, because I haven't really gone anywhere. Like I've done some walks with the dog and stuff, but
yeah,
my oxygen levels were low, not dangerously low to where you would go to a hospital, but we checked them and they were lower than they should be. Yeah.
Okay.
It's really sucked.
And how are you feeling now?
A little better.
Yeah.
Like I'm up and I'm about,
yeah,
you know, but, I'm very, very, very fortunate that the work I have, I can do it when I feel good.
Right.
I do writing and research. I make shows, but I don't have to necessarily have the live schedule the way you do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I feel good for 8 hours, I work for 8 hours. But if I feel shitty for 8 hours, I don't. I know I can pick it up later. And I always try to just keep working ahead.
Right.
So I'm very fortunate. I feel really bad for people who have gotten sick and have to go into the workplace. Like, that must really fuck them up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially, you know, the commute and then just having to be around people and everything. Yes.
You just don't have the energy. Like, yeah. Literally, Matt, like sometimes you can't even get out of a chair. Like, I haven't been like that in weeks, but it is like that. But I'm in a good mood.
Good.
I'm in a good mood. Good. It looks like the Red Kingdom, as promised by the GOP, has not come to pass.
Mm, that's right.
Ford lost to CUPE.
Yeah.
No, honestly, all that stuff. I was getting really depressed about politics for a bit. And I've always said this. I want the conservatives to be a healthy, strong party.
Yep. And
I want that.
I'm going to step in for a second. You are the most consistent with that messaging. Of all the lefty CBC, you know, downtown Torontonians I know, you've always been the most balanced. The one line I always like that you said is that, you know, for the most part, being left or right, and maybe this is more of a Canadian thing than certain parts of Georgia, is that left and right both kind of want to get to the same place. They just go through it through a different journey. Well, and I like that because you always have a very balanced approach, even if, you know, you are more on the left side.
I would assume most people value things like quality of life, respect for others, rule of law. And if your way of doing it is by increasing freedoms and lowering taxes because you think that's a better path, and my way is maybe more like redistribution of money because I think that helps us get there, we can debate that.
Yeah.
So I've always said I want the conservatives to be conservatives.
Yeah.
Sometimes people who are on the left like me, we can lose the plot because we get too excited about ideas and ideology and yada, yada. And then you got to remember, whoa, but it still has to work.
Yeah.
Right? It's fine on paper, but in the real world, shit gets weird. And sometimes we have to remember some of this stuff just needs a tweak, not a rip down. But my point is, why I've been so upset, like a lot of people, is I don't feel like the conservatives have been conservatives. I feel like they're quite extreme. I feel like rather than, you know, supporting the institutions out there, they want to rip them down because they feel they don't represent them anymore.
Right.
And to that, I would say, pump the brakes. So that's why when I see that all the Trump candidates didn't necessarily do well, when I see that Doug Ford wants to bring in notwithstanding clauses and ruin charters, people, you know, I didn't agree with QP, but I think they should probably have their charter rights.
Yes.
You know, and we can have that debate too. But my point is this idea of extremism, where's it getting us?
Nowhere.
You know, people on the left, be on the left. People on the right, be on the right. When you start going off into the margins, weird things happen. And not always good things. So I'm in a good mood because I kind of feel like a lot of people must be looking at this and saying, it's complicated, but I'm going to bet on sanity.
Did Herschel Walker win?
He's losing right now by about 50,000 votes, though. It's very close.
I mean, listen, you know, the only guy who had 280-plus yard plays in the same game, electric. The thing that always kind of just depressed me when it's like the evangelist. You know what, though? Maybe it's just about abortion. Hey, here we are talking abortion. Fun. We'll get to the least
power
play.
Well, we did get through COVID.
We did get through COVID.
Anything else that's fun to get to?
But when I see that like 85% of evangelical. Thank you. In Georgia voted for Herschel Walker, you know, a guy who's had, you know, many abortions and divorces, and his opponent is a very devout Christian individual, that was like, oh, that kind of makes me sad because it's like, so no matter what, you're going to vote for the red person. And maybe that's just in the end, you're worried about, you don't want abortion to be around.
Yeah, you know, I can't remember which senator it was, but it was some incumbent who actually just was asked about that and said, look, I don't care about any of that. I just want to win the Senate.
Right.
And I was like, wow, so we're saying the quiet part out loud now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of people approach it that way, which again goes to extremism. You should be uncomfortable about voting for someone that doesn't represent your values, especially when they're supposed to be. Like, right. This is why you're picking them. You know, the hypocrisy of it should make you nervous. Look, Canadians, all I ask you is this. We fucked up by not letting Aaron O'Toole get a better run at things, mm-hmm. because I think he was much more of that centrist figure.
Yeah.
You may not have agreed with his policies, but so what? My feeling was he probably wasn't going to drive 100 trucks to your house and have them start honking because you didn't agree with them.
Just like Mitt Romney, you know, would have been a far better option than Trump.
100%. And I didn't agree with Mitt Romney. He was right about Russia, though. He was asked in a press conference once, what's the greatest global threat to America moving forward? And he said Russia, and people laughed at him because everything was talking about terrorism and that, but he had his eye on that ball, and sure enough, here we are 10 years later, and he's right. So anyway, I'm in a good mood because I feel like I'm healthy enough to be with my pal Matt.
Yeah.
I feel like the world, maybe the temperature has gone down
a couple degrees.
Just whatever, a little.
Yeah, you know, not a light switch, just a dimmer switch. Just dimmer it a little bit, that's all.
It's like when you have a fever, there's 102, that's not good.
Yeah.
And then there's 100, which you're like, you know, I could probably sit up and watch a movie.
Yeah, yeah. I can. 102, I'm sleeping. 100, I'm binge watching. Yeah, no, That's exactly it, Matt.
We just got to get to a place of binge watching sickness.
Exactly.
You have a dog, and I can't look. What time is it? We got to talk some sports, don't we?
We'll get there. This stupid dog.
Okay.
Hang on.
Before you go on, I'll let you run with this. But I get to the door. I haven't been here in 2 months. I knock on the door, and I hear ruff, ruff, ruff. And I think, oh, well, that's new.
Yeah.
Go, Matt.
Yeah, first off, me getting a dog responsibility, me not being able to do what I want, get the hell out of here. Now, this is my twin brother, Josh. This is his dog, Louie. I'm going to own my own dog. And Louie is the most user-friendly dog. I've done this. I've walked on the street with this dog without a leash, and the dog does not go more than 3 inches from my foot. I could have a mountain of kibble to one side, me on the other side, and Louie is going to be right here. What's Louie doing right now? Like, what's Louie doing?
He's sleeping.
Yeah, he's sleeping.
He's lying down and sleeping.
The whole time. He's got a thing full of food. He has treats. He has toys. No. My foot is here. He's going to be right here.
He's affectionate.
Oh, he is. But it's just like, I tried to go downstairs to pick up his stuff from the car, and he was so loud. I put him on the leash, and I'm like, okay, come downstairs with me for 18 seconds. You know, he'll cry when I close the door to go to the bathroom. I feel if I open the door and he comes in, he'll cry even more. But it's just like, this dog, it's just not leaving my feet.
And so, you have to pick up the poop, which is a nightmare for you.
Yeah, the poop picking up is a nightmare. As anyone knows, scatologically, I'm a prude, as I think every human being should be. It's just I do not look when it's happening. I look away, and then I put two bags on, and it's just hold my breath, just go in, and just get it done. So that's me. That's me when I do it.
I love, I don't even know where to start. I'm getting better from COVID.
Yep.
The Republicans did not sweep through the midterms.
Yep.
Ford loses against QP, mm-hmm. and Matt has responsibilities.
That's right. That's
honestly, right. I was not sure today would be good or not.
Yep.
And it's just turned out great.
Don't worry though, Bob. If I'm going to turn that smile upside down,
turn that.
I will be leaving the dog at 6 o'clock today for private collector's thing. Some of the most high end BC wines from the Soyuz region. Shout out, Checkmate. So their Chardonnays are crazy.
I said to Sandra the other day, my wife, I said to her, Matt's Instagram feed. I don't know if I'm changing or he's changing, but it's gone to another level of debauchery and decadence.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I actually just missed the sunset shots. Now it's just one posh ballroom after another.
I know. And I didn't even put the fine wine National Club dinner shots up yet. Those ones are going to be pretty, pretty posh. Anyway, I got a question for you. And I was thinking about it today. I don't have an answer.
Okay.
In the NFL, it feels to me there are more feel-good coaching stories than high-end quarterback stories. By this, I mean Robert Saleh,
yeah.
Pete Carroll, Brian Daboll, the coach Sicari, whatever his name is.
We're not including Jeff Saturday in this.
We're not including Jeff Saturday in this.
Just checking.
We can get there. The coach for the Eagles. There's all these really Mike Vrabel, what he is doing in Tennessee, having no receivers. It seems like there's all these great coaching success stories. But on the other end, Kyler Murray, step back. Aaron Rodgers, horrible. Tom Brady, bad for 59 minutes and 15 seconds. A horrible game against the Rams. Matt Stafford, really bad. You go up. Joe Burrow, still getting sacked a lot. Josh Allen, a little bit down this year from last year. It feels like, and I don't think this is a good thing for football, is that all the stories are all the great coaching stories and not the great quarterback stories.
Dave Naylor once said to me before we went out on the air that you can tell if a fan follows a team or not by whether or not they can talk about someone other than the coach and the quarterback.
Right, yeah.
That's who we gravitate towards.
Yes.
You know, and football in particular, that's not true of every sport, but the football coach is presence. Al Pacino in Any Given Sunday.
That's right.
Presence.
These are the inches that you're fighting for.
What's interesting about your point, Matt, is we're talking a lot about coaches, I think because the play hasn't been that good, generally speaking.
Ding, ding, ding. And I won't do all the gambling stuff, but unders are...
No, do it.
But here's a question. What I like to do, don't tell a stat, tell a story. So it's like, hey, the unders are hitting at 61% in the NFL season. Okay, well, great. Thanks. I don't bet. Why the fuck do I care about that? But that also means the quarterback play has been really bad because no one is scoring points. And we're now focused on the coaches. This is aesthetically not been a great NFL year.
I would agree with that. And also because the rules have been made so that it's not an especially tough and rugged game either. They've been made for more offense. We're not getting it. It's like, when remember when I said to you over the summer, I'm watching the CFL and I can't watch these quarterbacks miss this many passes?
Yes.
The field is 1,000 meters wide. You can't find somebody open.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating. Nobody likes to watch mistakes. And especially at this high level. You watch the NFL because you want to see amazing things. I would disagree with you about Josh Allen. His play has been a little bit down.
But
he's just off MVP and his elbow's hurt now, and we'll see about that. But you're right. The quarterback has always been the attention magnet.
Mm-hmm. And it's not there this year.
For all of sports media in North America.
Yes, because it's easy. Because he's right there. You know where he is. Your eyes go there. It's the one position football. You know what their faces look like. Except for Davis Mills. I have no idea what the Houston Texans coach looks like. He could be sitting here right now and with a sweater that says, hi, I'm Davis Mills. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. But who are the great storylines? And maybe because...
Well, is Jalen Hurts a great story?
Jalen Hurts is a great team story. Now, he's improved, but it's not like he is this elite thrower. He's an elite player, accomplishing things at an incredible level within the team concept. But he's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not he's not the reason there that the Eagles are winning. He's not the only reason, I should say. So,
And maybe it's going to be a bit like we're coming off this era of incredible quarterback play. And some of those guys are still around and some of them are retired. But Brady, clearly, like, it's almost sad watching him play now.
Until the last 44 seconds with no timeouts. And he hits a guy whose name is Cade Otton. Cade Otton. In a game that had like 30 punts. It was a horrible game. And then 44 seconds left, down by four. No timeouts. And then Brady is hitting some stiff tight end you've never heard of before.
Captain Happy Aaron Rodgers is 3-6. So,
I think he's just bad.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just he's not a good quarterback. Like, it's not just that his receivers are this or that. He's missing. See, CFL complaint. He's missing all over the field.
So for 10 years plus, we've been trained to talk about these guys like gods.
Yeah.
And now they kind of look like shit out there.
They do.
I mean, they have their moments or whatever, like you say about Brady. But generally speaking, you watch a Tampa Bay game and like it's a lot of field goals. Like, it's just not exciting. And, you know, this new crop, it's just bloody freaking hard to find great quarterbacks. We think it could be Josh Allen, but he's like, to your point, he's not exactly there yet.
And by the way, Patrick Mahomes, he's great. You got Mahomes,
but he doesn't have six Super Bowls.
Yeah.
He's not Aaron Rodgers where he's, you know, our Dan Marino, you know, like it's just, they're not there yet. So what I was going to say is it's a bit like the era in the NBA between Jordan and LeBron.
Right. Yeah.
Where there's
lots
of great players.
Yeah.
But there's nobody that the whole world says, oh, my God, this guy represents the sport.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. This year is Spurs beat the Pistons 84-81 in game 5 of an NBA Finals.
Tim Duncan might be the greatest power forward in history. He's certainly one of the top two or three. And he won 4 titles. But we don't think of that as the Tim Duncan era.
No.
We could, but we just don't because there's something missing. And I feel like that's where we are with these guys.
And I part of it is Andrew Luck retired, so we didn't get that. Trevor Lawrence hasn't become it. Mm-hmm. Kyler Murray regressed. Matt Stafford is shit. You know, like just you go up and down. And the great quarterback stories, it's still Mahomes and...
No, and Justin Herbert. You know,
and Herbert's regressed. They've neutered him. His numbers are... He's had games where he's thrown the ball 50 times for 200 yards. I'm like, that's a Giants quarterback. Like, that's he's been neutered. Justin Herbert. Derek Carr's got Devonta Adams, and some weeks Adams has one catch for 3 yards. So anyway, I think it's a bad thing in football when we're celebrating the coaches more than the quarterbacks.
That's actually an interesting take. And in a lot of ways, the coaches, at least strategically, as interesting as the quarterback. I mean, God, those guys are so amazing what they can accomplish. I mean, it's chess with 300-pound people. It really is an incredible accomplishment. But at the end of the day, that's not what you pay your money for. It's not the guy with the clipboard in the sideline.
No.
You want to see amazing. Can we make the move over to the Leafs now?
Absolutely.
The Leafs may be the most frustrating team to try and follow in history.
Oh, yeah.
Because they will look so bad one night and then so good another night and really... I don't know, flip a coin. Who you getting? But when they're good, God, it's hard not to love them.
Mm-hmm. But they are also such a hard team to love. They're a hard... The weird thing about the Leafs is they are designed to be loved. Youth, talent, excellence, good people for the most part, a lot of charity, like legitimate charity work. A captain in Tavares that also easy to root for. You know, everything is there. And in the regular season, all this stuff. But then they just go through these pockets where, in the end, they're just frustrating. I think they're just an intellectually or emotionally weak team.
Yeah. I think you've really, like, ding, ding, ding. That's the magic word. They're up and they're down and they're frustrating. If nothing else, they're interesting. They're certainly an interesting team. There's a lot of narratives flowing in and out. They're an easy team to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
But they're a hard team to love. Mm-hmm. And I think it does come back. When you look at 93 and the Pat Burns teams, I don't think those teams were as good as this one. But that team was fucking tough.
Yep.
Mentally and physically. And led by Doug Gilmore, who's not as great a Leaf as Austin Matthews by any stretch. Part of that is duration of his stay here. But also, Doug Gilmore's just not as good as Austin Matthews. Nope. Austin Matthews is incredible.
Yeah.
But there was something in that personality that a whole city could rally around. Wendell Clark as well. And then you just, you know, Sundin had to win us over, but when he did, he did. I just don't, like, maybe Austin Matthews has to have that Sundin arc where people recognize the talent but don't love him, and then eventually they do, like an ice cube melting.
At first, just, yeah. It, well, yeah, at least with Sundin, you could always, the defenders of Sundin could always say, well, he didn't have a lot of great wingers around him, or a lot of great line mates. You can't say that with Austin Matthews. As we talk about, the main problem is the greatest sin isn't losing, it's not trying. And mm-hmm. just disinterested play. And we saw that during the West Coast swing. And it was against really bad teams. And then, of course, they come back and they beat Boston. They beat Carolina. And they nearly beat Vegas. And, you know, they almost had a chance of doing something no NHL team has ever done, which is beat three teams with a winning percentage of 750.
The last three games have been really exciting.
Yeah.
And not just because they got 5 points out of it, but because on the second night on a back-to-back with your third-string goalie and you beat Carolina, mm-hmm. especially when you're down early and you look like you might be a bit out of gas.
Yeah.
And you've just gotten bad news from the night before that your second-string goalie is now hurt and you're down to Shelley. That's an almost guaranteed loss.
Yeah.
But they pulled it out. And then that game against Vegas, even though they lost in OT, was a really good game. Like, it was actually fun to watch. You had two really good teams going back-to-back.
Yeah.
I mean, back and forth.
It was aesthetically great. Actually, it made me wonder. I give you only two options.
Okay.
Your team gets scored on because the opponent was cycling you to death for 45 seconds, and it was one of those felt like inevitable goals, you know, when you're just wave after wave. So you get scored on like that, or you get scored on because you did a dumb turnover. And most of the goals last night that Vegas scored on started with a turnover. So a turnover-based goal or 45 seconds of your opponent dominating. Which would you rather have?
Oh, I would rather have the turnover goal.
Exactly.
100%.
Yeah.
Because shit happens.
Yes.
But if you're getting dominated, you just start to, one, you start to lose interest in watching your team being dominated. But it also has a greater sense of inadequacy.
Yeah.
Like, a turnover can be fixed.
Yes.
Don't do that again. But 50 seconds of cycling the puck, it's like, oh, you guys aren't physically good enough to keep up.
Or you're not trying, you're not winning the battles.
Whatever.
All that kind of stuff.
I think, you know, the funny thing about the Leafs is we're going to return to all of these questions again. Like, there's three games, so we've put aside the, okay, do you need to make a trade for defense? What are they going to do about their goalies? Like, they look good for three games. People put them in the trunk.
Yep.
And then close up the trunk, lock it up. It'll get opened up again in 20 games when they go and lose 5 out of 6 and look like shit.
Yeah. And that win against Philly to get started, the thing I like the most, I'm like, good. We get a moment of normalcy. We just get a moment of not, we get sevens. We're going to have conversations that's a 7. Not everything is a 10 or a 1.
It was like the midterms for me last night.
Yeah,
did we fix all the problems? No.
No.
But it's a little more, this looks a bit more normal.
Let's just relax. Let's just, you know. By the way, I love what Tortorella was ripping the media. Oh, you guys don't know what you got here. I was going to say, John, no one's wrote an article saying that Keefe should be fired. Everyone talked about what are the things that could happen, what are things that might need to happen. But I didn't read one article where the headline is, fire the coach.
So in defense of Sheldon Keefe, who I actually think misplayed his hand
mm-hmm.
and was too strong too early.
He was.
I think he did a lot of what the fans would like to see because he was saying all the things we think.
Yeah.
But Mitch Marner pissed me off a lot more with his talks about how, well, you know, we know in the room we have what we need and, you know, all the haters out there and this and that. And it's like, you know what, buddy? Your team is a colossal and continuous fuck up. So why don't you not talk about how all the haters out there are putting you in a corner and just say, you know what? We've underperformed. We know we're better than this. People are critical, but they deserve it because we look terrible and we're not a terrible team. And in the end, that's on us. I don't want to hear about all the haters out there. You know what? They hate you because you suck.
Yeah.
Stop sucking and they'll stop hating. That's how this works.
Also, as we've discussed, I hate the term haters because it's a clever tactic. Because haters indicates wild emotional outbursts and not thoughtful criticism. And for the most part, people were in unison, were upset by the same thing. The media would point it out. The tape would show it, and the fans would say, "Hey, this is what we don't like." Most of it isn't haters. When someone says, "Oh, the haters," I'm like, "No. Maybe get rid of the word haters and look at it as criticism." And if everyone is saying the same thing, instead of externalizing, maybe internalize and go, "Huh, maybe they have something there."
So I feel like I've used this example before on the pod, but I remember when Alex Anthopoulos pulled the trigger and made it the big deal for Reyes and Dickie.
Was it Burley?
It was Burley, like all the guys he brought in.
The big Marlins deal that eventually didn't work out. Yeah.
And I remember that year, the team just never looked right.
Yeah.
And the fans started to get restless. And the smart writers ripped the fans. It's like, do you not see who's out there on the field? This will correct itself. And eventually, the fans were right.
Yeah.
And the writers were wrong. Because the writers were outthinking themselves. They were playing a game where they didn't want to look like the fans, because the fans are always, to your point, emotional. They're not well thought through. They're haters. They're just hating on this thing. But the fans were actually pointing out what we see on the field does not look like it's going to lead to success.
Yeah.
Right? And at the beginning of the Leafs season, in those first 10 games, they were shit.
Yeah.
They weren't unlucky. They weren't ringing them off the post. All the underlying numbers said this team is being outplayed by mediocre to bad competition.
Yep.
And so it became almost like a tussle, like between the smarts who were like, "Oh, but you know, this talent is going to, you know, it's going to reverse itself." And well, of course it is. They're not going to be this shit forever. But the people who are pointing out they suck right now are right.
Yeah. Oh yes, they're at that point. It was 100% correct. And it's just a weird thing. It's always the hater thing always bothers me.
You know, when you're at work and a producer, and you're such a nice guy, but you must feel this sometimes, a producer doesn't put in the proper effort to do something.
Yeah.
And there's a fuck up at the end of it.
Yes.
And then that person divests themselves of blame by saying, "Well, it's this or it's that or it's whatever." And you kind of just want to say to them, "Look, all of that may even be true, but in the end, you didn't do what you were supposed to do. And you also didn't come to me and say, like, can you help me with this? Like, you had a responsibility. You didn't live up to it." And it drives you nuts. Like, you would be so much less upset if that producer said to you,
"Hey, sorry.
I tried and I," you know, like turnovers versus cycling.
Yes.
Everybody commits turnovers. But if you're not playing hard on the puck and you get outworked, that's on you.
Yep. No, it's true.
But they did look really good last night, though.
They did. It's funny. It's one of those games where for people that enjoy being mad when the team loses, last night's loss made it hard for them to be mad. It just is. Vegas is a damn good team. They've won like now 8 in a row.
The midterms on CNN last night, the third period on TSN, and Jaws on AMC.
Ooh.
So that was 30, 32, and 33 on my Rogers.
Wow,
so
nice.
I just had to skip over A&E because I think they had like some kind of show about neighbors who are mad at each other.
Okay,
something.
Yeah.
But like 30 game, click, yep. Jaws. Oh, Indianapolis speech. I'm going to stick here for
gotta
a bit.
Stay here.
All right, let me check in and see what's happening with Herschel Walker. Boop.
Yeah. Oh,
liked him better as a running back. Okay,
yep.
Back down to 30. What a night of TV.
It was. By the way, I saw Andor. I'm all caught up on Andor.
I was looking at you thinking, God, I hope we can talk. Okay, do you want to do Andor first or do you want to do the Raptors? How much time do we have?
Oh, we got time. No, we got plenty of time. Oh, no, we're good. We're like 30 minutes in.
All right. Well, we didn't talk a lot of sports off the top, so maybe let's just do a little Raptors talk.
I'm excited to see what Scotty Barnes looks like, because he had his first kind of bad game against the Bulls, even though he had the best in-game dunk I've seen by a Raptor in I don't know how long. I mean,
since the Vince years, probably.
Yeah, like he murdered Vucevic and Caruso.
James Johnson cocked that joint.
Oh, yeah. James Johnson. He's got like a double black belt in like Taekwondo. That guy's a scary. He's in the list of the quiet, scary guys. Mm-hmm. Like Oakley was and Draymond. I don't know if Draymond's scary. Draymond's just kind of a punk. But like Oakley, like scary, intimidating guy. And that was James Johnson. But we won't do James Johnson. The Raptors, they're still kind of the same team where, I mean, Siakam is playing at a higher level. I mean, that's. But it's still, when they win, it's the same way. You can always tell. They hit 12 more shots than their opponent, 10 more rebounds than their opponent, and they forced, they were plus six in the turnover margin. And the question is, when do they, and again, it's early, when do they win games? When do they win games by outshooting their opponent? I think they've done it once this year.
It's a great point. They've been a lot of fun to watch, and there's been a lot of great storylines, chief among them, Pascal. I can't say I owe him an apology in the sense that you and I talked about should he be traded. And yeah. I don't think I ever said he should be, but I certainly intimated they should be open to it.
Mm-hmm.
Much more so yeah. than not.
Oh, yeah. I did as, yeah, of course.
But mostly because guys who are good slash really good, but then the unhappiness settles in and the performance starts to drop and the injuries, like usually those guys fall off.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare where they come back and are better than ever consistently. So playing the odds, it felt like he was at the end of a nice run, but God, he's just great to watch. The team's, I think, 6-4 and 6-5, right? Or 6-5
like
right
that.
Now.
Yeah.
So they're basically just a little bit above 500, which feels like who they are. But I never feel like this team is about to go on a run of wins. I feel like every night they could win or lose it.
But on the other end, I don't feel like they're about to go for a run of losses.
No, they're just sort of who they are. They work hard. They're well coached. They're not super talented, but they're talented enough to be a better than average team. They feel like a classic six seed in the conference to me, where you go, that's a good team. And I bet you they could win a few, but they feel like a first round out team to me, which is kind of who they are. Unless Scotty Barnes takes a huge jump.
Yep.
But, you know, it took Ja Morant 4 years to become an all-star. And now he's a top five player in the league, but it took 4 years to get there. I think we got to pump the brakes a bit with Scotty.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's never going to be a fully linear sort of growth for him. But that's what I feel best for is that we wondered, can Siakam go up 7 or 8%, and he has. You know, he's not going to be, again, he's not going to be top five or top seven, but that's fine because that's the most rarefied air in North American sports. It's like, oh, so you're not as good as Luka, Giannis, Durant, you know, okay, well, you're not there. But then almost no one is there.
He's 1C. Yeah. Like, he's in that top tier, but he's probably in the third tier of the top tier now, which is an incredible place for him to be because that puts you somewhere between 9 and 12.
The NBA this year, say this, though, I don't remember a time where there was parity.
Yeah.
That's something that doesn't happen in this league is parity, where there's more than four teams that could win the title this year. That almost never happens in the NBA. If the Raptors, you know, were able to make a move and if Barnes took a jump, you know, there is a scenario where the Raptors are in game six of the Eastern Conference Finals. It is absolutely possible.
Kevin Durant's playing great.
Yes.
He is a great scorer.
Yes.
And if it was Pascal and KD and OG and Fred.
Oh, they could win a title.
They could win a title.
Yeah, you could win a title.
And then you would have to give up Scotty and Gary Trent Jr. and probably either a Boucher or a Precious.
And all your
and
picks.
Some picks.
And a right? lot of picks, a lot of pick swaps.
But you would be in a position to win a title. Like
yes.
that team, KD, Pascal, Fred, and OG could go up against the Bucks.
Yes.
Could go up against the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
And make it to a championship round. So when people say it's crazy to think you should trade Scotty, I don't think it's crazy to think you should trade Scotty. I think Scotty's going to be a multiple all-star by the time he's done. Maybe even, you know, like a maybe all NBA potential.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe,
yeah.
You know, but Kevin Durant's the greatest scorer in history. You know what I mean? Like, so when you look at this team and you go, okay, well, they're 500. Well, it's because they've chosen to go the long route.
Now,
so this is just who they are.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll see. They have had a tough start. Like when you look at their opponents, it's been, you know, it's certainly been not been an easy walk for them. The thing though is I still have the Raptors are my sports safety blanket.
Mm-hmm.
In a world where the Blue Jays were up 8-1 against Seattle, where the Maple Leafs do Maple Leaf things, the Raptors are always my security blanket. Now, they're not my Armani suit. The Leafs and the Blue Jays have the talent to be an Armani suit. The Raptors right now don't, but they are a sturdy blanket that will protect me against the slings and arrows of the other teams.
Okay, so I love this, and I want to analyze this because I've been trying to think, why do I prefer to watch the Raptors play when I know they're a 500 team, mm-hmm. more or less.
Yeah.
Versus watching the Leafs when I think that they could go on a run of 800 hockey.
Yep.
But they could also piss me off. Like, you know, we've made the dating an actress analogy a lot of times when it comes to being a Leafs fan.
Yep.
Is it worth the emotion?
I got a food analogy for you that I just thought of right now.
I love it.
Okay. The Maple Leafs are scallops. The Raptors are pizza. You know what you're going to get with that pizza. You're always going to be happy. You're going to be chewing away at it. And sometimes you're not even going to think about the pizza, but your body's going to be happy. Now, a really good scallop, every moment you eat that scallop, you're going to be thinking about all the different aromatic and things going on in your mouth and your belly. And it's wonderful and it elevates you. But a scallop has there's a thin little line between undercooked and overcooked. And when it's on either end, it sucks. And you're like, wait a minute, I spent $32 for ocean scallops and they stink. And I'm seeing on the street, someone's got a slice of za that costs them $3 and they're happier than me.
Matt, that's why people come to this pod.
That's right.
For genius analogies like that. That's actually a really good one. And the fact that scallops are so easy to get wrong.
Yes.
They really are. They're just they're a high leverage food.
Yeah, they're an incredibly high leverage food.
You know, I look at Scotty and I think to myself, I love how he plays. I love how they all play. You know, I think Fred is on the verge of becoming more clutch than good, which is a bit of an issue. Gary Trent Jr., he's a bit of a variable. But generally speaking, like, these guys just go out and work hard every night.
Yeah.
And, like, they drafted a bunch of people who generally don't work in the NBA. And they work,
yeah.
Whether it's Precious or Boucher, Banton. You know, the league sees 100 of these guys a year, and they never stick. But the Raps, they just make the most out of what they have, you know? They're a frittata. Like, I got leftovers. What can we do with it? Pascal's not. And it's funny. I was thinking about Scotty, and I was thinking, because we love him, he's charming, he's extremely talented, it's easy to forget that he was in this incredible draft class. I would rather have Scotty than Jalen Suggs.
Yep.
I would rather have Scotty than Jalen Green, who's 20 points a game this year.
Yeah, he's doing well.
But I would rather have Mobley or Cunningham than Scotty.
Yeah, you can make the argument. Absolutely.
You know, I think when you look 10 years out, they'll all be great players, and Cunningham and Mobley will be slightly better. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah, we'll see.
He's got to learn to shoot. But they show, like, the Leafs, you don't know when they're going to start worrying about the haters, and the Raptors really don't care.
No, because
they're just out there to play.
Well, because the Raptors are incredibly hard to hate. God, how are you going to do on your draft? They nail their draft all the time. They have good people who work hard. They got a coach you love. You love Masai. Like, you know, when they lose to better teams. You know,
they don't get blown out a lot.
Nope. They went on a great run after they won the title and Kawhi left. You know, they put together a proper title defense.
To your point about drafting, Christian Koloko.
He's not a lot of second round picks.
Centers.
Are playing 30 minutes on a winning team.
It's just, I don't know how they do it, but they're smart. They try so hard. They're like professionals.
Yes.
Again, Gary Trent Jr. is really the only player night to night you don't know what you're going to get from them.
I get nervous about him.
OG a little bit in the sense that, like, how much he's featured in the offense clearly influences him. But on the defensive end, he's one of the best players in the league every night. Like, you just know what you're going to get with them. I don't think they can win a title going this way.
Nope.
Not unless Scotty becomes Kawhi, which is, you know, how often does that happen?
Very rare.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking to myself, like, Scotty is somewhere between Andre Iguodala and Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
It's a big space, but it's a pretty important one, too.
And that's not a bad place to be in. By the way, Kawhi, it's just like that body has been, either he hates basketball or that body has betrayed him.
There's only two players that I wish bad for. One is Vince, and those days are over,
mm-hmm.
and Kawhi.
I don't have the same animus towards Kawhi because at least he left to go be with family. Vince left just because he got pouty. And the moment Vince left and went to Brooklyn, he started trying again.
He was in the hallway at halftime during a Sixers playoff game doing his negotiations for his contract.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Like, Vince is the one.
No. I mean Kawhi.
Oh, Kawhi. Oh, sorry.
With the Uncle Dennis bullshit.
Oh, right. Yeah. But at the very least, though, about Kawhi is that Kawhi, as a Raptor, gave it his all. And whatever bitching he did, it never got out. There was no leaks. There was no, someone from Kawhi's camp says blurp, blurp, blurp. There was none of that. He came out, did the job.
Oh, I'm going to sit back for this one. I'm going to lob you one, and then I'm going to sit back.
All right.
Whose train wreck looks worse on them? LeBron's with the Lakers or Kevin Durant's with the Nets? Oh. Who looks worse on them?
On them. Yeah, because there's nothing worse than what's going on with the Brooklyn Nets and Kyrie Irving.
How much of that can really be blamed on KD?
KD...
I'm going to leave it to you. I'm going to sit back. Watch.
I think it's on KD.
I'm going to put my mic down.
I think this is on Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant, this is on Kevin Durant, and I'll tell you why. When all the Kyrie thing happened, and when Kyrie has now been suspended, you know what Kevin Durant's big lament was? I wish this could have been kept within. You know what Kevin Durant never did? Kevin Durant never said, hey, Kyrie, you know that movie that you watched? It's really anti-Semitic. It is a bigoted film. And I do not at all ascribe to that. But instead, what was Durant's complaint? I wish this had been kept more quiet. Kyrie is surrounded by enablers and yes men, and we see it in all walks of life. You want to know why Eddie Murphy isn't as funny anymore? Because he's rich and surrounded by people that says, Eddie, you're really funny. How about another fat suit?
That's a great argument, and I hadn't really considered that one. On the basketball court, LeBron is is peerless, yeah. But As a front GM, office guy, he's not horrible. So good.
He's horrible. Hey, listen, hey, players, you want the power? Oh, yeah, it's the player empowerment. You know what? Other people that have jobs in scouting, general managing, some of them know what they're doing as well.
I know that they had to make a lot of moves to get Anthony Davis, but when you watch Brandon Ingram and Ball and
yeah,
just all around the league, all these old Lakers who've gone on to have nice careers, and you go, if even half of them had stayed with the Lakers, they'd have a team. But the Russell Westbrook move is the killer.
It is.
That's the killer.
Could have gone DeMar, LeBron decided on Westbrook. Imagine just you switch those two guys. Also, the Lakers got lucky. If they don't go in a bubble, like Anthony Davis has never played that well as he did in that bubble. If it's just normal and this the more travel, the grind, maybe the Lakers don't win that one title. But the Lakers are an absolute mess. I don't know how you get out of this just with age, injuries, and just a dysfunctional situation. But the Brooklyn Nets, when Ben Simmons isn't the number one issue with your team.
He's not even in the top three.
Jesus, and he's bad. It's like just, and it's Kyrie going to come back? Will he be allowed to come back? Just that whole, the way that whole situation was handled was just absolutely horrible.
They don't know. They're in real time and they're being watched by an entire globe of fans and reporters, and it's a mess. You know, hey, this is a weird, and I want to get to Andor in a second.
Yeah.
But just a quick, I don't know if this is a complaint or just an observation, maybe a bit of both. Is there any other sport where the broadcasters feel as inclined to talk about a player's, the teams they played for as a kid as much as hockey? Mm. Like I'm watching Riley Smith used to be a St. Michael's buzzer. Then went on to Owen Sound.
Yeah.
It's like, why do I care? Like, why do I care where he played? Why?
You're right. It is far more ingrained in hockey, which is weird because you feel like it'd be more in baseball because baseball's got more time to clear out to tell a story. Do we blame Bob McKenzie? Do we blame Pierre Maguire?
Pierre Maguire for sure. But Chris Cuthbert does it all the time. Gord does it all the time. They all do it. They all talk about where they played as kids. Could you imagine watching baseball and Justin Verlander's dealing and they're like, Justin Verlander used to be a Tennessee Vol.
Yeah. It's like, huh?
What?
Yeah. And the thing is,
played as AAA in Peoria.
Is it now? I want to do like, what is it for each broadcaster for each sport? What is the tick? Because you're right, in hockey, it is that. And the weird thing is how does that connect with the audience? Most of the audience watching a football game probably saw that quarterback play once in a bowl game. I never saw most of these NHL, because I don't watch Brandon Wheat Kings hockey or whatever. Mm. I don't watch a lot of minor hockey. It's not like the people watching on TV. How much of them do they see of those players in the minors?
In football, you can understand because the NCAA is the greatest AAA league in the world.
Absolutely.
We're still laughing about Herschel Walker playing for the Bulldogs.
Yep.
You become a legend. And you can kind of make that argument for basketball, too. The Final Four has dropped off, but for a lot of years, it was, it was like the Kentucky Derby of basketball. It's just even people who didn't watch the sport watched this. But, like, hockey, to your point. When was the last time you said to yourself, man, I'm really glad we got Morgan Riley out of the WHL?
Yeah.
He was a great player in the WHL, and now we got him. Like, when was the last time you thought about him playing? I think it was Saskatoon.
Yeah.
I think it was the Saskatoon Blade.
Zero.
Does it have any relevance to the game?
No, I've never thought about one player ever and what they did ever before they got to the pros.
Do you think it's just the Canadian folksy thing where they're just trying to remind people of the little communities that everyone came out of?
I guess. And then there's Austin Matthews. That asshole went to Switzerland. You're too good for us, Austin. You're too good for us.
But they do it with the NCAA, too. It'll be like, for a former Hobie Baker finalist playing with Wisconsin.
Yep.
I don't care.
Yeah.
And it's not like Riley Smith is like 19 years old and playing in his first game.
He's
a pro.
You know they're going to do that whenever that Matthews and Nyes. Because he's playing in college right now, apparently doing really well. There's going to be a lot. When he gets up to the NHL level, there's going to be a lot of NCAA talk.
Jimmy Vesey, star in the NCAA.
Oh, that's right. He was in the. He was going to be good.
If I had a kid who was good at hockey, F the CHL.
Yeah.
I would be going to D1 and I'd go to Cornell.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Or Providence or any of these really good schools that you could just never get to as like a thinker.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Ben Scrivens, he went to Cornell, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's another thing. Ooh, one thing.
Ivy League Ben Scrivens.
Another thing we do, we always mention the football players that went to Harvard.
Hang on three. One, two, three reveal. We're gonna talk about the one player they always do this.
Oh, wait. No, I'm trying to remember his name. Oh, okay. I got another one.
One, two, three reveal.
Okay.
One, two, three.
Richard Sherman. Oh, because that was the other one. Yes.
You said Harvard.
I know. And I was trying to think of why.
Sherman was Stanford, right?
Yes, he was Stanford. They always bring up that Richard Sherman went to Stanford, that we screwed that up. But no, honestly, Bob, I was trying to think, oh, God, what's the former Buffalo Bill quarterback who's now on Jacksonville with a giant beard, played for 17 teams? I forgot the name, Ryan Fitzpatrick. But yes, we always say Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard, always.
I also love, and this doesn't happen as much, I just personally love it, when they point out that the offensive lineman was an academic All-American.
Yeah.
And they show the guy and his neck looks like a loaf of bread.
Yeah. You know why they do that? Is because there's this perception of that if you're big and fat and you're a road grader, you're stupid. It's overcompensating. It's the broadcaster going, oh, look, you see that guy who just chop blocked the nose tackle? He's got a 4.0 GPA. He's a smart fella.
In mechanical engineering.
Yeah, exactly.
He actually built the stadium they're playing in today.
It's like, wait a minute, you mean... Unless is someone that's not a nebbish-looking nerd can also do well in school?
We talk the linemen are to football what the fighters were to hockey once upon a time, and the grinders. They're the ones that everybody loves.
But yes.
The fighters, generally speaking, didn't go to Harvard.
They did not.
But the linemen are smart.
Wait a minute, though. Ken Baumgartner.
Where'd he go?
I think he went to Harvard.
Oh, come on. There's no way.
Yes. I think...
Here, I'll look it up while you do Jeff Pollock.
No, hold on. You're not going to be able to. My phone's turned off. Oh. I always turn my phone. By the way, yes, speaking of Harvard and Stanford and smart schools, our lawyer, our sponsor, Jeff Pollock, he went to all the smart schools. Actually, I don't really know what school that he went to. But man, is he a smart fella. I bet he went to all of them at once. He was like a happy meal of Ivy League schools. Anyway, jeffpollock.com. If you need legal help, if you need legal assistance, he's our lawyer. And if you need help, call him, Jeff, or email him, or tweet him, jeffpollock.com. I haven't done a read for a while. I feel a little rusty. Jeff with a G, as in, gee, I wish I had a lawyer. jeffpollock.com.
I thought you were going to say, gee, I wish I'd practiced this.
Gee, I wish I had some copy.
If I'm right, Jeff went to the Western School of Business, which is actually known as the Ivy School of Business.
Oh.
So he didn't go to the Ivy League, but he did go to the Ivy School.
Well, I think him for that as a McMaster Marauder. But anyway. True?
I went to Western for a year.
Yeah.
How do you think it went?
I thought it went really well. There you were. You were at all the keggers. You were the one throwing out nicknames.
I had a Stevie Ray Vaughan poncho and floppy leather hat, and I used to walk down the street playing harmonica.
Boy, you must have got a whole lot of ass.
I had a girlfriend. What did I care?
Oh, thank God you had
a
girlfriend.
It's the kind of thing you could only do if you have a girlfriend.
That is
I wore the same pair of jeans for 3 weeks just to see if I could.
Yeah. I'd like to interview her and ask her how she felt about the jeans. Might have a different feeling.
You know what? I'm sure she didn't like it, but there's probably, like, that's low down on the list.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk Andor.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen episode 10. Have you seen episode 10? It's the one that came out this week. I've seen the first 9.
No.
Okay,
no.
So let's just talk first 9 then. Thoughts, because you got caught up.
Dark, brooding, different. What I liked about it is they were going to go with a different tone, but they didn't want to go, see, we're nothing like the source material. Do you remember the last Wolverine movie with Logan?
Yeah.
It's called Logan, sorry. And that movie is just a depressing slog. And all there was the directors and producers going, see, we can be gritty. There's going to be swearing and death and no one's happy. Screw you, X-Men. And I'm like, guys, I get it. You're being different. But is there a, like, you felt like you were being different just to be different. What I love about this is the tone. It's this grittier feel to it, but it still has the heart of the Star Wars universe. I thought they'd done a really good job of just blending the two.
You know what really jumps out at me? And I love Andor.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Lord of the Rings and House of the Dragon. This one is the champ right now, for sure. And by a country mile, too. When you look back to the old footage in your mind of Darth walking around the Death Star, it feels like a kid's fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
When you see that this is the Empire, it almost feels weird that there's a guy with magic attached to it, because they do such a good job of, this is actually what a repressive regime that would destroy a planet looks like.
You destroy worlds not by laser cannons, but by administration.
Yeah, and the whole idea of Mon Mothma is a senator that no one wants to listen to, and they're turning off their lights because they're just disapproving, and she has a bad marriage, and all of it kind of feels like if Star Wars was real,
mm-hmm.
this is what it actually would be like, which is such a strange thing to say, because it's like, if the space opera was real, this is what it'd be like. Performances are great. Production values, fantastic. And it's actually interesting because, and I'll let you go off on this, it's perfect for you, Matt, because you hate the things you like being depressing, but you don't mind them being smart.
Exactly. Listen, I don't mind it dusting and depressing. I don't like it when it's almost like performative. Like, we're just going to be depressing. We need it. I don't like overcompensation with my Star Wars narrative arc.
So you felt that way about Last Jedi.
Yeah.
You thought that the idea that Rey was just nobody. Well, it was fundamentally a breach of your trust in the Star Wars universe, where everybody is somebody.
And Luke is just a Debbie Downer. It's like, Luke, give me a fucking backflip and chop off a stormtrooper's head off with a lightsaber. Would it kill you?
Yeah, and to me it was the second best of the 9 movies.
We don't have time.
Exactly. Are we going to relitigate this?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now. Yeah, anyway.
the show is so smart and so well made that it revived the franchise for me, mm-hmm. because the last few,
Obi-Wan.
It was fine.
Yeah,
but there wasn't much there.
Yeah.
It was kind of just fans.
Boba Fett, bad.
Mandalorian's been good.
Mandalorian.
But it's been a while since we've had some.
Yeah, Mandalorian was good. Yeah.
We've been on that cliffhanger a while now, Luke. It's time to maybe show up for season 3.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, let's get the makeup.
But
going.
I love it. And one of the things, like, that's like the Star Wars universe got, like, why did that one take off when other ones didn't? But it really is the universe of our lifetime,
mm-hmm.
more than the Hobbit universe, more than. I think maybe for other kids in a generation, maybe Harry Potter is that. But for us, Star Wars is our Old Testament.
Yes.
And so new stories being attached to that is dangerous. And I just feel like Andor has managed to feel new,
mm-hmm.
and still feel like it belongs to the universe.
Exactly. Perfect way to put it. Feels new, but not for the new for new's sake.
No, and again, like, I kind of feel like with the other shows, like, The Mandalorian was pretty good.
Yeah.
I like The Mandalorian. You know, the other ones, though, to me just felt like Boba Fett was not great.
No, it wasn't.
Like, it just wasn't a good show. But Obi-Wan, to me, felt like a totally a pointless show. Like, what did this add other than, like, when you think about the big universe, what did it fill in? Like, what blank areas in your imagination did it fill in? It was just a story with Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, this fills in the what was the Empire really like before the Death Star was created? Like, how did you get there? Like, they are really filling in those blank spaces.
Yeah, and, you know, and there's one shot where it's, like, the first time you see an X-Wing. Like, oh, so, okay, so that's where you eventually are going to get built.
Deirdre, the Imperial management, I guess would be the best word. She looks just like fucking Amy. It drives me crazy. Every time I see her, she looks like Amy.
Right. And both of them just cold-hearted.
Have there ever been two people less alike?
No, not at all.
They look the same, and they're literally the opposites.
Now, you've come here, and all the Halloween is done.
How many pieces did you have?
Oh, my God. Fuck if I know. I bring people listening, we're doing it for my condo, and the place gets decorated. It's like a haunted house here during Halloween. After Remembrance Day, the next time you are here, it'll then look like the set from Elf. It'll just be all Christmas. It'll just be all Christmas. But we wait till after Remembrance Day. That's the rule.
Right. Because not American Thanksgiving? Because you celebrate American Thanksgiving.
Of course I celebrate American Thanksgiving. No. I wait till at least after Remembrance Day. Because remember, if you start celebrating Christmas before Remembrance Day, you were rooting for the Germans in the First World War. I don't make the rules. I just follow them.
And I thought the white pants and Labor Day was the toughest one. But apparently this one's even a little tougher.
Yeah.
Do you remember that time when we were on the air at TSN and we did the tailgate party on Thanksgiving Day? Because we had to work it. We brought in the buckets of KFC.
Yes.
We got dressed up in our toques and scarves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the problem with the KFC is the final half hour of that show, you are just grinding to a halt.
Well, and also, like, our show was 9 to 12, so yeah. KFC at 10 in the a.m., like, no, like, people were still in donut mode.
It's lean protein.
So I wound up eating, like, four or five pieces. And, yeah.
That's a night not to be with your wife.
Or really just anybody.
Hey, before we end this, because it's been a little while, update on the Bob Mackiewicz global sabbatical. Like,
2023, uh-huh. Sometime in January, we'll be taking off, and we're just finalizing right now. I might go, my first location might change, and I don't want to say just yet.
Sure.
But it's going to be probably where we shoot the film that I'm going to be working on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, but it'll probably be California. And then once that film's in the can, I'm off to the wind.
You're off to the wind. Exciting. Pickering, Ajax.
All of it. Seriously. Sault Ste. Marie.
Ooh, Timmins.
You know what place I actually liked from Northern Ontario?
Mm.
I did like Thunder Bay, although it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
But North Bay.
North Bay, yes, okay.
I liked North Bay.
It's far enough, but it's not too far.
Stan Butler used to coach there.
Really?
Yeah.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Magic.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.